This podcast is in partnership with Design Biennale Rotterdam, Phoenix Museum, Lack of Guidance, Margreet Olsthoorn, New Institute and Rotterdam Partners, as they all share the common goal to create awareness, share opinions and empower creative growth.
Your inner self listens more to the people that give you a hard time. So this would be my tip for anyone. If you appreciate someone, tell them.
I think as humanity, we've been waiting way, way too long to do anything. And actually, we're not really doing enough.
If you ask them to do that, then the chances that they will excel and feel happy and are happy to come to work is much bigger than when you force them to do exactly what you need them to do.
Today I'm joined by Inga Kameraad, Strategic Advisor, Executive Director of ULI the Netherlands and former Managing Director at MVDV. But behind the titles is a deeper story. We talk about how to build a culture with care, lead without ego, and why intuition is more strategic than we think. We explore what it takes to lead an office with over 350 people, reflection and her experiences in Africa, shaped her leadership values and redefined what success actually means. Good day, Inge. Welcome in the podcast.
Thank you.
How is life treating you at the moment?
Very well. Yeah, really good. Yeah.
Can you describe where we are today?
I can describe where we are today. It's not where I normally work. We are now at your place, Bastiaan, and I'm enjoying blue sky and the skyline of Rotterdam. So not a bad place to be. But normally when I work quite a bit from home. I have my own, kind of created my space within my own house, which is very comfortable, near the coffee machine, near everything I need. But I'm also quite often out of the house for appointments or meetings with the people I now work with.
Can you describe a little bit what kind of a work you do?
Yeah, I started as an independent consultant advisor earlier this year. 2 days a week, roughly, I work for the Urban Land Institute, which is a network organization. Maybe we'll talk a little bit more about it later. And I work for Building Balance on a training for architects to help them to work more with bio-based materials. And other than that, I have some smaller assignments and advices that I'm working on, and I'm very much enjoying it.
Let's talk from the beginning. How did you end up here?
Oh, this is a long journey. Start at the very beginning. I was born and raised in Zeeland, a province in the southwest of the Netherlands. And when I turned 18, I went to Eindhoven to study architecture or building engineering or a combination of the both. I have to say it wasn't a super conscious or deliberate choice. I was, I think, what they call a beta student in high school. So I wanted to do something technical because that was good. And then I also wanted to do something creative. This sounds very cliche, and it is maybe. So that's how I ended up at the University of Eindhoven to study bouwkunde there. I have to say, in my second or third year, I thought, what on earth am I doing here? Because everybody who goes, at least that was my perception, if you go to study architecture, you do that with the final objective to become a famous or somehow famous architect. And I quite soon found out that I'm not a very skilled designer. So then I thought, if you're not a skilled designer, then what do you do when you finish here?
Did you want it to be famous?
No, I don't think famous, but I wanted to do something that I'm good at. I think that was more the idea, that I didn't just want to be very mediocre, but at least felt comfortable in doing what I did. And I didn't feel comfortable designing. I think that was more it than becoming famous, because I never had a dream of becoming famous. But I found out that I'm not a very skilled designer. So then I did, in the end, decide to finish my studies. And I graduated in architecture and renovation and repurposing old buildings, which helped me to not start with a blank paper, but have something to build onto. That was a bit my trick then. And I also enjoyed my graduation, but I never really worked as a designing architect. So I got the papers, but very soon from my first job on, I was more into organizing, structuring systems, bringing people together than really being a designer.
When you got your paper, did you already know what you wanted to do next? Did you already, during your studies, think, this is not me?
I had no idea. Yeah. No, that didn't freak me out. I just thought, okay, now I have this paper, I graduate, I need to find a job. And I started at the municipality of Eindhoven to be someone who goes to construction sites and count the steel bars in reinforced concrete. Very interesting. But then after half a year, I thought, this is not what I want to do. Definitely not now. And then I started at a small architecture firm in Eindhoven. And there I learned a lot.
Can you give an example?
This was an architecture firm with 15 people, so you're quite close to everything. Well, I wasn't in the financial talks, but other than that, you do hear a lot of what's going on in an office. And what they did, one big project I work on was the renovation of one of the flats in the Bijlmer. And there were so many stakeholders involved, and the director of the firm was quite open to bringing me along to all those meetings. So from him, I learned a lot on how to hold yourself in meetings. I could sometimes get really annoyed if someone said yes one meeting and no the next one. And I think he kind of taught me on how to negotiate, how to build alliances, how to keep your head cool, which is hard when you're 25, 26. At least for me it was. So you just, it really helped me that he gave me the trust to just be there and not as his assistant, but really someone who gradually took on more and more responsibility. So that was a good thing for me to do. And the other thing they also did was a refurbishment of privately owned houses, especially in Amsterdam, so the really smaller apartments, the pre-war apartments. So with a colleague, we would go in and measure all the kitchen doors and whether the toilet needed to be redone or not. So very meticulous work. But so the difference between those two, and that you also see this is all important in the process, I think gave me sort of a holistic additional training after my education.
Do you see it as one of the most important moments in your career?
No, I think there's, for me, not one such thing as the important moment, but you do see some stepping stones where you see you made a growth spurt or you learned more. Let's say on average, you learn something every day, but then sometimes you have weeks or months where you think, oh, now I'm really learning so much more or learning so many new things or get to know many new people that also help you to grow. And I think this was definitely a moment, and I worked there for 3 or 4 years. It was a time frame where I did learn quite a lot. Yeah.
In the past years, you've been in a role of responsibility, called leadership. Do you think about these moments that you just described a lot and that you think, okay, apart from the daily things that I want or need to do, I would love to give space to those who are younger and climbing up?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
What kind of lessons do you give them?
First of all, I try to be open for any conversation. So if people wanted to have a talk or wanted to discuss something, I would hardly ever say no, because I think that also helps people to grow, that you feel that you have a listening ear, that you feel you have someone you can talk to. And also, I think giving people trust that they can do it and also make mistakes. And I think looking back, there are moments where I maybe should have done that, give people even more trust than I did, because I sometimes also have the tendency to want to control things too much. That can also feel a little bit too micromanaging. So that is, I think, something I'm still learning, that when to give space and when to just, take it back to yourself and do it in the way you really want it to be.
It's not easy.
No.
How do you do this? How do you make space and time for yourself to actually do the self-reflection? And do you do it on your own or with a mentor or coach?
Yeah, when I was in between my jobs, so to say, I think we make a big time jump now, but I did approach a coach. And I've had coaches throughout my
I would say the past 10 years of my working life. Before that, not really. Not because I didn't want to. I think I was less aware that would be a road to travel. I had a coach, I think 6 or 7 years ago for a couple of years. And I would just call her whenever I thought, okay, I'm stuck. I'm going around in circles. It would help me if someone asks me the right questions. And that did really help me to, for instance, when in stress, the tendency to take things more to myself is even bigger. So then I would talk to her and also find a way to say, okay, maybe you are now overdoing it. Just delegate the things to the people that should actually do it. But then also let go. Don't start controlling or checking everything. So that, I think that helped me. But in the period between my job that I ended at the end of 23 and me starting as an independent advisor, I also had a coach. And for me, that really helped to, again, sort of streamline your ideas, ask the right questions. One thing she told me at the first meeting was, okay, when you go home, you go past the stationery shop and you buy yourself a little notebook and you start writing. Not for the sake of writing a book, but just for yourself to write down the things that you have done or observed or that made an impression on you. And I made the promise to myself to keep doing that, but I already am sort of losing it. But in those couple of months, it helped me a lot to have some self-reflection. And also by writing down, I'm annoyed about this conversation, by writing about it, it sometimes helped me to figure out why I was annoyed or why I was happy or why I was inspired. And by figuring out that why, it also helped me to then think, okay, then maybe I should find more of that or less of it if it's something annoying. And also reading books about certain things that inspire me, watching documentaries about things that inspire me. These are also things that give me a moment to self-reflect on, to make myself smarter, but also to reflect on what do I want or where do I want to focus on. And the other thing is also speaking a lot with people. When I was in between my job situation, I had liters of coffee and many lunches with people. And many of those conversations helped also inspired me on what could be a next step. Where do I want to work in? What do I not want to do? What brings energy and joy, etc.
Was it easy to have these conversations with people when you expressed that you might not per se know where you want to go?
Depend a bit on who it was. With people that I didn't know that well and thought, maybe I want to work with you. Sometimes I felt a little bit silly. Yeah, I have no idea. I have no clue. You feel a bit ignorant. But it also was sort of liberating to not have a plan on what you want to do.
Do you also consider this as a tip for other people?
Yeah, I think so. If you don't feel stressed by the not knowing, because some people are very uncomfortable with that. For me, that was something that I was actually actively looking for. But if you are fine with not knowing, then yes, take that time and also enjoy a bit of what life brings you.
You had several coaches throughout your career or in the past 10 years. Are you also a mentor to others?
Yeah, I think for some people at MVRDV, I have been trying to be a mentor, but then I was also a manager. So sometimes maybe that was a bit conflicting. When I worked in Africa, I did quite some mentoring of young entrepreneurs. At the moment, I'm not mentoring anyone, but if people think, yes, it would help me to have a conversation, yeah, then absolutely, I would be open to that.
Let's go back to your journey, because you already named several, MVRDV, ULI, Africa. You first went to MVRDV, and you've been there for 12 years. Can you describe a little bit what your first period was like?
Yeah, absolutely. I started at MVRDV in 2008. I had interviews at the company, and I remember my job interview with Natalie very well, when I thought, okay, let's just bring it out in the open in the first meeting that I don't want to work full time because I had children. And also in general, I kind of like the mix between work and doing other things.
And Natalie is the
Natalie is the DV of MVRDV, so indeed one of the founders. And she was immediately very open to this. Yeah, of course, this is no problem and that's fine. And we also have children. So I really liked how she approached the, yeah, that work is one of the components of life. When I started at MVRDV, they were then, I think, around 40 employees. And two people that had just left were both, let's say, part-time architect and part-time they did all the organizational things. And they left at the same time. So they merged these two half organizational jobs into one, and they called it, I think, project coordinator. So that is what I applied for, and that was what I was hired for. And well, I had already figured out that I really love bringing structure or figuring out how things work. So I just grabbed whatever I found on my way, but not projects. So I was no competition for anyone, because all I wanted to do was streamline fee proposals, HR processes, contracts, planning, things like that, and try to make it some sort of a smooth operation so that all these architects could do what they were very good at and I could do what I was good at. So bit by bit, I grew what I was doing in the company. I think I started mainly, now from the beginning, I did a lot of planning and then I did a lot of streamlining on the contracts to make sure that all the clauses in English were the same as in German, as in Dutch, as in French. I did quite a bit on the fee proposals, and then I also went a little bit deeper into all the HR processes and tried to make that more of a system.
I can imagine they were quite happy with you doing the things that they did.
Yeah, it was a very good synergy, and I loved the vibe at the company, and it was really, yeah, a very amazing time for me to work there as well. There was always something happening, and there was a lot of positive energy. And I also liked the international part, because before that I had lived in Africa and I thought, okay, then we go back to the Netherlands and it's all Dutch again. So I also appreciated that international component of it. And also when working there, I again realized that it was smart that I had finished my studies, because I, even though I was a very mediocre designer, I did understand what all the phases are. I knew about the stakeholders. I know about the process. If people would talk about things in meetings, I would not think, what are they talking about? No, I understand what you do. So I started more and more to appreciate that I had actually chosen that studies and that I had also finished it. So it did come together very nicely.
That was really good.
Yeah.
Yeah. It sounds like you had all the freedom, everything you wanted to do.
Yeah, in a way, I think it was, because the fact that I also worked with many people that later became friends kind of makes it a dream job, I think. I don't remember ever going to work thinking, I don't feel like working. No, I went to the office with a smile on my face. And yeah, it was definitely a great place to work, with many special colleagues that I now call friends. And it also sometimes difficult things, of course. I mean, it's not that
sure.
I just had 5 years of only fun and laughter. But we also lost projects and things went uphill and downhill again. But also that actually, I think, helped me to understand better what it means to run a company.
Can you describe one project or situation where you felt the odds were not in your favor and that you somehow needed to turn the table? And I don't need to hear the details, but how you coped with it.
We had quite a big urban planning project where we would also do architecture projects. We had it all lined up and many interesting meetings were held, and talking about the contract and our fees and how we would organize it. And every meeting, it went down and down, and it was less work and not only this. I remember there that I could sort of dig in my memory of what I had learned from my first boss, so to say, how to keep your head cool. And not that changed the outcome of the situation, but it changed what it did to me. I was annoyed sometimes and I didn't like how this process was going, that you make an agreement and then by the time you are back in the office from the meeting, you have an email which says completely the opposite. But it helped me, I think, to better accept and just think, okay, this is also part of work. This is part of life. And it's not the end of the world. It's not great, but it's also not the end of the world.
What is a tip for someone else listening, how to stay calm during those talks?
for me, it helped to have someone that you can just really talk to and say, this is insane, this is terrible. And then together think, yeah, this is really crap, big time. But hey, life goes on. And that you can just sort of, by sharing it with someone who feels the same, that you can also find the strength or whatever you want to call it to turn it also into something, yeah, that you can laugh about later. That helps for me. For me, the sharing part is a big thing in general in my work life also.
What would you say is one of your biggest strengths and what is a point of improvement?
Strength is also always a pitfall, as we know. I think one of my strengths, even though it sounds a bit weird, is that I'm generally a nice person, I think, an approachable person, that I want to listen to what people have to say and not think that I know it all myself. And sometimes I thought, wow, what a skill is this to be nice. This is just crazy or it's nothing. But I think I've come to appreciate that more and more of myself, that, for instance, also now when I do things, I'm very able to have an open and interested conversation with someone and easily bring people on board or give them the feeling that they're seen or heard. So I think that is a skill which also helped me while I was the director of MVRDV. I did sometimes also get that back as a weakness. You don't always need to be nice. You don't need to be liked. There's truth to that as well. But yeah, I've come to appreciate it, I think. Something that I should improve. Yeah, I think I should learn to not take everything so personal. And that, of course, has a lot to do with what I just described, because it can also become much bigger than it actually is. I should listen back to the tips that I have just maybe described.
I'll write it down for you.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Talking about MVRDV, and you already mentioned that you were in the leadership position. You started, if I'm correct, with a team of 150 people, having a huge international reputation. When they asked you to have this position, what were your first thoughts?
It was a little bit different. I worked first at MVRDV between 2008 and 2012. Then we moved abroad as a family to Uganda. And then we were 40, 50 people size office. And when I came back from Uganda, they were 150. And that's when I re-entered, or I was allowed to re-enter. And then initially I started as manager operations, or I think that was the title we gave it, more as the right hand of Jacob van Rijs, one of the other founders, or the VR in MVRDV, who was then the managing director. And after a year and a half, we started talking about that it would be good if someone else stepped into this role as managing director. And then I said, maybe I can do this. And then we had quite some conversations to talk about what that would look like, because I don't have an MBA. I'm not a trained managing director. So I sort of learned it on the job. But I'm very grateful for the trust that Liniak Panatili gave me. So then I started as the managing director, CEO, whatever you want to call it, of MVRDV. And then indeed we had, I think, 170. And bit by bit it grew to 350 employees in 5 different locations, which was very interesting and inspiring. And
can imagine.
Quite an amazing journey, yeah.
And you've been in that position for 5 years?
Correct.
Have you ever had sleepless nights?
Yes, of course.
What do you do when you have sleepless nights?
You twist and turn and you think it'll all be fine. No, I did have sleepless nights on whether we were doing the right thing, whether we were taking the right decisions, how people were doing. And it depended a bit on the type of issues, how long I would be awake at night. Because if there's something you cannot, if it's beyond your scope of influence, you can lie awake for a long time, but there's nothing you can do. If there were things that I would do, I would normally be awake even longer to start thinking, okay, then I should maybe do this or have this intervention. But of course, I did not many, but I did have sleepless nights. Yeah.
Do you have tips?
I think the sleepless nights I found the worst were when I had personal conflicts. And that then again goes back to me wanting to have a good personal relation with people. Those were, that would really get under my skin. My tip is to start writing about it, to sort of also digest it for yourself. Is it something that I can do differently? Or what is actually the situation? And why do I get so worked up about this? That's actually something I do differently now. I'm not running a big company, so life is a bit different. But of course, you still have things where you sometimes feel, is this going in the right direction? And also talk about it and try to put it in perspective. These are all very easy things to say and very hard things to put into practice. And what also sometimes helps is just put a pen and paper next to your bed, because sometimes you have great ideas at night. Write them down, and then it's sort of out of your head and out of your mind, and you can do something with the day after.
How was it for you when you start with 170 and you end up with 350? It's crazy.
That doesn't happen overnight, luckily, because that will be quite freaky. It just grows and grows. And it also gives a lot of energy because it's, we were working on fantastic projects all over the world. People were very eager to come to the office in the morning. So it also brought, for me, quite an amazing vibe to be part of that.
And the brand MVDV also gives or shows a lot of energy.
Of course, yeah.
How much of community and culture did you learn from Africa that you could use in this period? Can you describe a little bit what you did in Africa?
My Africa experience is quite different from what I did at MVRDV. I've lived in Africa for two longer periods, and Africa is not a country. So I lived in Mozambique for 3 years and in Uganda for 3.5 years. And that was both times due to a job my husband had there. So initially in Mozambique, I found it quite hard to figure out how to fill my days because I didn't speak Portuguese. I had no idea what I was going to do there. I only had this experience of this office in Eindhoven and my 6 months at the municipality. But I thought, let's just give it a go and see what happens. So I remember after 2 days being really frustrated, ironing some shirt, thinking, is this my life? But then, of course, things change and you do learn a language, you make friends. I started working as a volunteer for IUCN, a nature conservation office company, or NGO, actually. They had a director, a Mozambican lady, who was quite disorganized. So she asked me if I would be willing to organize all her files on all her projects. And I thought, okay, well, let's just start somewhere. I did that as a volunteer, but it gave me a great opportunity to learn Portuguese. And out of that, I was asked to work on a community-based project. I was asked to work on a small lodge somewhere in the countryside. What I found very inspiring there is that people are quite resilient and you can build a new life anywhere. Or maybe not anywhere, but you're capable of more than maybe you initially think you are. So, Mozambique has been quite an amazing time for me. Also there, I did some mentoring of young people.
What did you learn?
Yeah, in a way also to bring structure to certain things and also to think ahead, to ask questions not about today and tomorrow, but if you start a company, where do you want it to be in a couple of years' time? One of the things I worked on was in this community-based project. There was a very small village next to a national park where the elephants would sometimes cross the border of the national park. And they made their living by selling charcoal. So they chopped wood and basically were not having a positive impact on their environment. That's where IUCN came in, wanting to give them other ways to generate income. So we did beekeeping and honey and a tourism project. So there I tried to help the community to think of ways on how to bring in these tourists and have them with a low impact in their community. I found that it was quite special, yeah.
And what kind of lessons did you use during your 5 years in the position of managing director? For instance, what you mentioned that you saw in Mozambique is that resilience is quite important, that whatever comes up,
You'll find a way.
And when I hear 150, 170,
you'll find a way. Absolutely. You know that you can do it, but I also know that I can't do it by myself, and I think nobody or not so many people can.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe sometimes we're too proud and think we should do it by ourselves, and I think that's also what I did indeed learn in Mozambique, that by having friends or colleagues or people, you build some sort of a network
That also helps you to learn new things, to approach new people, to start new adventures. And I think that's indeed also what I did at MVRDV, to think, okay, I have this colleague that I need for strategic input, this colleague that I need to talk about when I'm stuck with a problem like this. So yeah, knowing who to seek advice from and knowing who to include when and how. These are things that you do, I think, subconsciously, because I never really looked at it from that perspective. I think that's life in general also. But when you are put in a new environment, like we were in Maputo in Mozambique, you have to. You have to think, okay, how do I even go out and buy a bread in Portuguese? Oh, I need to find a house to stay. How do I find that? Can I drink the tap water? Who can I ask? Yeah, those kind of things.
Sounds exciting, but also far out of your comfort zone.
Yes, of course, but in a good way, not in, oh, I'm going to freeze because I don't know what to do kind of way. No, this, okay, let's just face this. I mean, we didn't come here to sit inside. In the first week, I met some people and they said, yeah, we're going to this island this weekend. Are you joining? And I thought, oh, hell yes, we're joining. Of course, whatever is happening, we're in. So I was also quite proactive in meeting up with people and building that social network. Because my husband went to work and I was sitting there thinking, what am I doing? But quite quickly, I found a good way of doing it.
Is this also your leadership style a bit? Go-getting? Or are you more on strategic and observing from the sideline?
No, I think I'm more part of it. I'm not so much, I think I should be more someone who zooms out. And that's what I learned more at MVRDV, because you have to when you have such a big company. You just need to every month, at least once, zoom out. Where do we stand financially? How do we look ahead? What are the projects in our pipeline? What's going on in the world in general? So you need to look ahead, but you also then need to translate that back to what does that mean for today and for tomorrow? I remember I was the director when we were in the COVID times. Yeah, from one day to the other, we needed to accommodate, I think we were then around 300 people, to work from home and feel okay. We had this whole IT thing, we had the communication thing, but also for me, it was very important that everybody felt, I'm at home, but I'm still part of this. I'm still part of being MVRDV, and we still have connections. Yeah, if I need a cry for help, then know that we're there. Also there, you zoom out and you think, what might happen? What's the impact on the company? What does that mean for what we need to do today, next week? How should we react to our clients, to our staff? I actually really enjoyed that it's so hands-on and that you can also make a difference by behaving differently. That's also what I got back a lot when I left MVRDV last year, that people felt, yeah, maybe safe's maybe not the right word, but that they felt, yeah, let's use the word safe, that they felt safe because I was there. That they also knew, even if they never came to me, they knew that they could if they needed to. So I think that's also what I wanted to give such a big company. And I know there's companies that have thousands of employees, but for us, it was really big. That even though it's big, the human scale is still super important.
I'm happy that you mentioned yourself and correct yourself, that safe is the correct word, because I've worked with you and that's one of the words that I use to describe you. So well done.
Thank you.
I know you're not so fond of too much of praise, but what do you actually do when you get praise and what do you do when you get criticism?
I think like any or many human beings, criticism weighs much more than positivity, which is sad, but also helps to grow. Because if we all comfortably lean back and think, oh, everybody thinks I'm great, I don't need to do anything, I think that is, at least for me, is not a good starting point. But it would help to, yeah, cherish a little bit more the positive things. So the first page in my notebook is about the compliments that I got. That was the tip of my coach, because I was in a bit of a soul searching period of life. Write them down. Whenever you feel like you are useless, open that page and write what people then told you. And it did help. There's quite some sweet things that people told me. Someone said, I have a little corner in my mind, and if I don't know what to do, I ask myself, what would Inger do? And I'm just, wow, exactly. And I had no idea.
So these are indeed things, they help when you write them down, because then the next time you get criticism, which is fine. It also helps to sort of mirror that with the things you do well.
It's quite a statement to read. What does it do to you?
Oh, a lot. Yeah, especially because it came from a very unexpected angle. It was a very warm bath leaving, which is very sad. That's also what I said to people. I need to die or leave to get such a shower of appreciation. Someone said, can I have a last Teams meeting with you? And I was like, okay, fine. I thought I'm going to get a lot of trouble and issues and problems again. But I thought, okay, I'm still working, so let it come to me. So then I entered the Teams and this person said, yeah, I just wanted to say how much I appreciated you and how much I've learned from you. And I was like, oh, wow, I didn't see this coming at all. It did mean a lot. Yeah. But it's also, I found it sometimes painful that your inner self listens more to the people that give you a hard time, and there only needs to be a couple. So this would be my tip for anyone. If you appreciate someone, tell them.
Are you ever going to publish the notebook?
No. No, that's not why I'm writing it. This is really for myself. And it has a lot of boring things. Today I went to a meeting and it was inspired. It's that kind of, well, I don't want to waste anybody's time on publishing that. No, it was really for me to find a way.
After talking a little bit more about all the appreciation people gave you when you left your position at MVDV up till now, do you see yourself more as someone people might look up to or seek as a mentor? I wouldn't say you would see yourself as a personal brand. Not at all.
No, absolutely not.
But do you want to accept the impact that you make on others?
I'm not against making impacts, but it's also not my goal, if you know what I mean. The things I do not do that because then I think, oh, this might inspire someone. And I think this then maybe goes back to what I felt at my studies, that if I do something that I don't feel that I'm good at or not good enough at to do it with confidence, I'd rather not do it. So the things I now do make sense to me, make sense to me to do in line with my skills and expertise and experience and who I am, but also now very much on content, that I can choose the things that I want to work on that do contribute to, a better planet, a better world.
How important is the term sustainability to you?
Very important. If we don't go into the semantics, if this is the proper term, but yes, super important. I think as humanity, we've been waiting way, way too long to do anything. And actually, we're not really doing enough.
What are you doing?
Well, what I try to do on a personal level is live a conscious life, buy second-hand clothes, don't eat meat, don't have a car, very conscious of flying. So yeah, these kind of things. And what I now do in my work, for instance, the training that I'm working on with Building Balance, to try to set the architecture sector in motion to work much more with bio-based materials in the Netherlands. I don't think that I'm by myself, I'm going to make the change, but at least I am trying to push things in a direction that I think we should follow. Yeah.
Very hypothetically, I saw an article about the fashion brand Patagonia, which you probably know, and their numbers are declining immense. And the reason why, due to what experts said, is that the soul of the company, the whole vision why it started, is lost. Would this, for instance, be something that you would love to step into?
I have a high admiration for Patagonia. I was truly inspired when I read last year that the owner had handed it all over, I think, to a steward-owned company, meaning that there's no profit to be made in the company, not profit that actually benefits someone. I would not mind being part of such a vision, no. I don't know much about fashion, but I didn't know they were actually that their success is sort of fading. But maybe we should, in general, stop producing clothes. I recently heard that we have enough on the planet for the coming 6 generations. So why not recycle from now on? Stop all the factories? I think we should start thinking much more radical on these kind of things.
Is there a job or position that you would like to do for a couple of years? Like, for instance, this Patagonia?
For now, I've been in jobs almost my whole career, apart from when I worked in Uganda and Mozambique, it was more as a consultant. And now I work as a consultant in, or freelancer, or whatever term you give it, in the Netherlands, and I'm very much enjoying the freedom. So for now, I'm not looking for anything that sort of puts me back into working within a company for a longer period of time. No.
Let's do some do or die questions.
Okay.
Are you more rational or emotional?
I would say rational.
A little doubt?
A little doubt, yeah, of course, because you cannot be rational without putting your emotions in. But if you're only emotional, I'm also quite pragmatic. I would also like to know, okay, nice discussion, but what next? So if you're only emotional, that's not really me, no.
Are you more on strategy or intuition?
Intuition, yeah.
How do you do this in such a position like ULI, where you're executive director, and MVDV, where you were managing director?
I think I start with intuition, and then, of course, it needs to translate to a strategy. But if there is a strategy that doesn't match with my intuition, that's harder than having an intuition and start thinking of a strategy based on that. If you know this
field, the gut feeling.
The gut feel, indeed. Does it feel right? Is this what we should do? I mean, of course, I was the managing director, but it was not just me taking the decisions. So also there, it needs to be strategic, because everybody needs, you have many voices that need to be heard and sort of taken into consideration. But also there, you use your intuition by knowing people, by knowing the market, by reading the papers, knowing what's going on in the world. So it's a combination there, really.
Have you always done things on intuition? Would it be for someone listening, I think intuition is the best, but someone told me, no, that's not good.
For me, intuition is much more, yeah, because if I would look strategic into, okay, giving everything up and moving to Mozambique and who knows what it brings, it's not super strategic, but it felt like something we wanted to do. And when we went to Uganda, it was not just the two of us, it was also our three children. It's also not necessarily strategic. Of course, you think about it and you think of schools and how are we going to live there, but you cannot foresee what it brings you, whether you'll be happy there. Will all five of us be happy there or only two? And then what do you do? If I would start making diagrams and pro and con lists of that, I'd go crazy. So then at some point, you just need to say,
just do it.
Just do it. Okay, I quit my job and we go. And it's good. But again, also there, I think if you're a person that gets a lot of stress out of this, yeah, then maybe live a more strategic. It also depends on what feels good for you.
Are you more a talker or a listener?
I think more a listener, although I'm maybe also a bit chatty, but I think I always like to keep asking questions, although now the tables have turned, of course, today. But normally I like to ask the questions and also understand what people are doing and why and how and yeah.
Is this also a skill that you learn to develop, or is it something within you, asking good questions?
I'm not sure if they're always good questions, but I think this goes together with having a personal interest in people, that you want to also then know these people, that you want to get an understanding of what they're doing. And yeah, depending on how well you know someone, the choices they're making and why. I think there I would definitely be more of someone who asks questions. Yeah.
Team sport or individual sport?
Individual. Yeah, I'm not a team sporter. No.
Do you do sports?
I swim. It's very individual. No, I've never been a team sport person. No. When I was young, I did gymnastics and I did do competitions. I don't think I was particularly good, but okay, fine enough. I grew up in quite a small village, so there was not a range of sports to choose from. It was football or tennis or gymnastics. So that's what I did. And I never did any team sport. Yeah, I joined a football team in Mozambique, but that was just a lot of fun.
How does this work for you when you do a lot of individual sports? Do you, I wouldn't say compensate or have the need, but what I heard in the past years, speaking still a lot of people at MVDV, that the company culture, everyone liked it very much. So it's all about team. Is this something that you are focusing on a lot to nurture this? Or is this something that just happened because you were doing other things? Or how much are you involved?
I think a team in sports is very different than a team at work. Because when you're a football team, you all need to be the best football player. when you're a team at work, someone can be great in making a contract, the other one is a fantastic designer, the other one is making great details. So you need different kind of people that together make a good product. So for me, it's different than winning a football match. And of course, you will have, if you have a group of architects, they maybe all want their signature on it. I didn't experience that so much at MVRDV, but there maybe you have more the similarity as how you have it in sports. But I always believed, or at least wanted to believe, that everybody has something to bring. So everybody can contribute in some way to the greater good or the common good. So if you know for yourself, but also from your colleagues, what they are good at and ask them to do that, then the chances that they will excel and feel happy and are happy to come to work is much bigger than when you force them to do exactly what you need them to do. And it needs to be possible, of course. But I really also want to believe that people, that everybody has something they can do.
You once mentioned in an interview, communication and collaboration play a vital role in fostering an open and supportive work environment. When do you know the work environment is safe, and how is this measurable?
What an interesting sentence I put in an interview.
Your words,
not mine. Yeah. How do you know that? I think you can maybe measure it on paper a bit by doing assessments and all these interviews. But I think you really sense it when you're there. For me, it was always very important to, I always went to the office. Maybe after COVID, I worked from home one day a week. But when you're there, you hear what people talk about at the lunch table. If you have a safe space, people will come to you. And if they don't dare themselves, maybe someone else will come and say, listen, there's something up there. You can sense it. You should be able to sense it. And maybe not in 100% of the cases, but as a general feel, you should have an impression.
Are you more practical or romantic?
Practical.
More a visionaire or a problem solver?
Problem solver.
Risk taker or conservative approacher?
I think in general, more conservative.
This one we probably know. Trust your gut instinct or follow the advice of a trusted mentor?
My gut instinct.
Never be in a leading position or never practice acting again.
Never be in a leading position.
Work with a highly talented but unpredictable team member or a less skilled and reliable one?
Well, that totally depends on what you want to do. If you want to win a competition, I would go for the first. Have someone who is really talented, and then I would just surrender and think, okay, I'll try to accommodate this in the best way, but then at least we have the best chance of winning this competition. If I look at what I'm now sometimes doing for the Urban Lands Institute, organizing events, I would be very stressed if there is someone who's very unpredictable. You just need to have that well organized, and it needs to be in time and it needs to be clear, because otherwise people get frustrated or uncertain. So it depends on the situation.
Allocate more time to mentoring young professionals in your field or to personal projects that fulfill your own aspirations.
I would say the latter, but it could, my personal projects could then also include a mentoring role. I would not see myself as many days a week a mentor, because I also get a lot of inspiration from the things that I now do and from the whole broad range of things that I'm doing. And that's also why I say no to a leadership position now, because I very much enjoy that I'm part of so many different circles. And I have deliberately chosen to work in networks that are in the whole chain of real estate. So not only architects, but also the developers, also the financial part, because we all need to do something together. So I'm deliberately, putting my nose in different things. If I would say I'm going to spend a lot of time on mentoring, I would feel I'm sort of fencing that off too much.
That was the last question for the AOB. You can relax.
Thank you.
Let's dive a little bit in what you do right now.
Okay.
Why ULI?
Why ULI? When I worked at MVRDV, we were a member of ULI. I have been to a couple of their events then as a member. And especially the European events, I found quite impressive because of the people that were on stage, because of the holistic view on what's happening in the built environment. You have a mayor who's saying something, someone from a bank, an architect, a developer. So it's really all the parties that you need to make something happen. I truly appreciated that. And when I started thinking about what's next, I saw that ULI Netherlands was looking for an executive director. So I had a talk with the chair of the executive committee. And we thought, okay, it would be nice to do this together as a tandem, so the chair and the director. But then I thought, okay, I would love to be part of this, but not full time, because I'm in the core. I'm not an event manager. It's also not my profession. I like the sector. I like the range of members. So I said, if you want me to do this, it will be 1.5, 2 days a week. And that's all I have. I didn't have anything else by then, but I knew that I wanted to do other things as well.
Is that easy to put that boundary?
Yeah, I had kind of made up for myself that I didn't only focus on one thing. So then I thought, okay, if they still are happy with me playing a part in the ULI, then I'd gladly take it on. And so it happened. Yeah.
How would you describe a normal week or 1 or 2 days in the week? What do you do?
For ULI, it's quite a bit of member contact, so existing members and trying to bring in new members also. And bringing in new members is not so much for the sake of business development, but also to make sure that we have this wide range of membership, so that we not only have the developers and the investors, but also some cities, the government institutes, housing corporations, to also foster this dialogue when you have an event, that you're not all talking with people from the same bubble, but make these bubbles interact and sort of step out of your own silo and step into another one and hear how other people see it. And also for myself, I find that quite enriching, that most of the people I speak with in daily life are all in the same bubble. And here it is different. Here you also hear different views, different voices, which I find really good.
Talking about a lot of different voices and circles that you're in, one of the do or die questions, you gave the answer that you would never be in a leading position again over acting. Acting, what does it mean to you? Why acting?
This is a hobby that I've had since high school, I think. And it's a bit on and off. So some years we do a production and then there's a year of nothing. What I like is that it's creating something with others that you build to a final product that you then share with the audience. Hopefully it brings about some conversation. I like the process. Yeah, it's a fun thing to do also to step into another role and try to make the best of that.
Are there things that you learned in acting that you could use?
When I worked at MVRDV, every quarter I would give a presentation to everyone. And then, of course, it helps that you've been on stage, that it's not super scary to have all those people looking at you. And of course, I would sometimes be a little bit stressed or a bit anxious for a presentation, but it kind of helps that you've been on stage. And also creating something with others in a way is also something that you also do at work.
So you work a lot with other people and you care a lot about what you hear from them. You know also when to draw a line and to zoom out. Do you feel responsible for this generation and the next?
Yes. Yeah, if I feel responsible, it sounds like I can change everything. But no, absolutely. I'm actually quite concerned about...
Yeah, you mentioned how you live.
I try to do that for myself. I can sometimes get quite sad if I see how little we are moving as the way we're doing things. We're not making any substantial changes. We're still ordering fast, ultra fast fashion online and have it shipped from the other side of the world. I can't really understand. There's still people that go on a holiday far away and skiing and a couple of times a year. And I think I find that hard to understand how you cannot be bothered and how you cannot find other ways to do things.
Is there one position on this planet that you would ever consider taking up to make a little bit of a difference in this?
Yeah, what would that be if I knew what it would be?
Mm-hmm.
As I said in the other do or die question, I'm not a visionary person. It's not that I can then be the prime minister and say, now we're going to do it all like this or like that. I think I would get really...
Could you be one?
I would find the whole
negativity in the press and on social media that would give me sleepless nights again. So not necessarily, no.
And if someone would ask you to be the CEO of Disney?
No, Disney, no. I have no...
Different ones. But a huge company, or for instance...
Well, Patagonia is a company that I admire. Fairphone is also one where I think this is... where you're really trying to do something different. But I'd need to dive a bit deeper into what they actually do. But to be honest, I start believing more in having less of those huge firms that have a lot of money and a lot of power because of that. And... saying the cap is, I don't know what your maximum turnover could be or your maximum team size, but make it smaller. If you look at the power that Tesla now has, I find that quite frightening. Or Amazon or Unilever. All these big firms, they have the right connections and they have the money. And to some extent, they determine how things go. And yeah, I know of smaller companies that have an intrinsic motivation to do things differently, and they show that it's possible. So sometimes I think, should we not move to smaller entities to make that work? I don't know.
What gives you hope?
For me, now it gives me hope that I'm surrounded by quite some people that are doing what they can do, that is within their own companies or within their own lives. Because many people are doing something. And I also think people are doing even more because we cannot wait for politicians to guide us the way. So that gives me hope. And I also think we need to stay hopeful because otherwise, yeah, what are we doing? When I start my day reading the newspaper, I can also lose hope quite quickly.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah, if I look at what's happening, the decisions that are being made, how it's all so pity and not a bigger thinking.
How do you pick yourself up after reading the newspaper?
Yeah, sometimes I think, okay, give me the second half of the paper that only has the book reviews or the movie reviews to not have such a rough start. Or say that I'm annoyed. And then life does go on. I mean, I don't help anyone by moping on what I read in the newspaper, but even the people that have the power to change things, they don't. And that I find sometimes a bit saddening.
Where do you want to go the next years?
Where do I want to go?
Yeah.
I feel that I'm now still a bit in an explorative phase. I've just started for myself early this year. So I think next year will be sort of an extension of this year with some new things and maybe some other projects that I'll be working on. And then I said, just give it a couple of years and then see how it goes. Maybe then I think, oh, I want to go back to employment and working somewhere. It could be. I don't know. And I also kind of like keeping that open, because if I now know that in 4 years' time I want to be there, I will feel less free to choose what I want to do now.
What could you give as a tip to people who are in a similar situation but don't have the full confidence about what you share? That you're quite at ease with this, but that they might feel FOMO, fear of missing out, that everyone on Monday is going to work, that they don't know what to do. What would you give as a tip?
For me, it helps to know what I find important in life, and it helps to know what I am capable of, and even more important, what I'm not capable of. And then try to sort of distill from that what you want to do. I find it important to now contribute to projects that either work on social equality or on sustainability or awareness, as vague as it may sound, but those kind of things on making the world a little bit greener and more fair, to work on projects that foster that. And some I may only be able to make a 1% change, and for others, when I'm in these trainings for building balance, then I am actively working with these 20, 25 participants. So then I feel that my influence or what I can contribute is a little bit more than 1%. So for me, those were important things that I know what I want to do. And I've also been in conversation with people asking, do you now want to work for me doing that? If that doesn't fit within those things, and I don't even think I make that so consciously, but for me, it's clear that I don't want to do that. And also what helps is to find out how certain you need to be. If you need to have a certain turnover every month, of course, you make different decisions than when you think, okay, I have quite a low profile life. I don't have a lot of costs every month. If I need to let go of things and have less income, but I do what I want to do, yeah, for me, that feels like the right thing to do now. Yeah, so it's your interests or your passion, your skills, and the certainty you need in life. I think those would be the three pillars for me.
Thank you.
Pleasure. Yeah.
That was my conversation with Inge Kameraad. An honest look at leadership transitions and staying true to one's values. From building structure at MVTV to mentoring entrepreneurs in Mozambique, Inge reminded us that leadership isn't about control, it's about trust, clarity and human connection. Whether it's journaling through change or saying no to roles that don't fit, she proves that your career can evolve without losing your soul. If you enjoyed this episode, make sure to click the follow button, rate the podcast, subscribe to the newsletter and spread the word, so we can continue to grow the Don't Waste Eye podcast. And remember, everyone struggles, and that's okay. But standing still prevents you from growing and reaching your potential. Keep moving forward, because the better you become, the more you'll inspire others. Don't waste your time, don't waste your eye.